room, shall I say. Today is... What is today?
19th.
Thursday.
Thursday. Ooh. What a surprise. 19th of February, 2009.
Wow.
How are we doing?
Awesome.
Finally, we got projector running. So, I guess we can start. Shall we go around the block?
Sure.
Start.
Let's see, what did I do this week? I was fooling around with downloading the latest NVIDIA X driver or whatever, and I got a question. I downloaded this big file from NVIDIA, and then for some reason it wants to compile the new driver for X. It's like version 177 or something. What is it doing? Why is it, or what, you know, why? What am I compiling? Then there's some mod probe that they want to stick in there too, and I don't. Doesn't quite work yet. I'm just wondering what's going on.
It's a
module.
Yeah, it's enabling the direct 3D acceleration from the card in Linux, which requires a specific module to be inserted into the kernel. That's the module that you're seeing, and it has to compile it, because you're downloading the source code, not the precompiled version.
They've got kind of their own module for the kernel, like plug-in for the kernel.
It's the traditional way.
That gives you direct access to the video card. Without that, you don't have direct access from the kernel to the video card, and you can't access all of those specialty things that make the NVIDIA driver work properly.
A module in the kernel is a lot like a driver in Windows for hardware devices.
Okay.
Good way to think of it. Yeah. Except you're not downloading, it's not like a pre-compiled like 32-bit.exe file which you're downloading in Windows. That's just a package file. It's actually you're compiling the source code. And it's kind of it's a different kind of structure, but it has a lot of advantages from a programmer's perspective, because then you can look at the code and then you can tweak it and try to do like hardware acceleration on the device.
And the real
it's the only way to have direct access to the card itself. You can't run it forever necessarily.
You get direct access from the processor to the video card. Is that the that
from
the
software to the video card?
Yeah,
you can probably think.
But you can only do that in the kernel, right? In the kernel level.
Yeah, the kernel locks everything down, because if you've got access to the hardware, you can just lock up the machine. So the kernel limits. Are all interface to the hardware needs to go through the kernel, and they need extra things, extra access to their hardware that isn't built into the kernel. So they need to have this module to give that extra access.
Okay, and then it's being compiled for what reason? Why can't they just give you a pre?
Because it's
pre-compiled, or because every computer's a little
because the kernel changes. In Windows. The exact same thing is going on in Windows, except Windows never changes the kernel.
Oh.
Their kernel is
always
the same.
So you can make a pre-compiled version of it, then?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
And when you download it from, the repositories, that's what you're getting. You're getting a pre-made version.
Okay.
All
right. So that's where I got that far, and it didn't quite work, so... I thought instead of wasting hours and hours, I'll just come here and ask a simple question and I'll have clues.
You might have run into something I ran into dealing with mod probe and depth mod. Mm-hmm. That I had to always, when I was using Myth TV, and I wanted to use the wireless card, but my wireless USB, I always had to run mod probe and depth mod, and just every time I never just saved it into the.
So to get it set up, when you turn it on.
Yeah, when I turn it on to get it, I have to run through all those steps again.
When you run
it in a script,
when you run the mod probe, it doesn't really set up anything. It just loads the module and it's done.
Yeah,
and
but
the modules are supposed to have in them code that says what hardware they work on. And when the kernel goes through, it's supposed to go through and look for modules that match the hardware. So it's supposed to automatically load them. Mm-hmm.
But that depends on the configuration of the kernel. But what he's talking about is when you load a module into the kernel, it's on a session basis only. So when you reboot, you're resetting it to a new session.
Right.
So you have to add it to, it's like you have to add it to, it's like etc/modules.autoload.d or something. If there's a specific directory, and then there's like a config file, and you have to add the name of the module in there, and then it'll automatically load it on boot. And then
because it was NDS wrapper. Was that, is that to beat the...
Whatever module you're specifically looking for.
Yeah.
Whether it's a module for a video card or...
Etsy what?
Etsy, like, auto... Etsy modules autoload.d or something like that. If you Google it, you'll find the directory. I don't remember off.
Were you able to get to the point where you actually had it compiled? Or
yeah,
it said it compiled.
But then
okay.
It ran, and I can't remember. There's an error that comes up in the XORG file.
It might be that there's a conflicting module installed, too. A lot of times, well, you were probably in X at the time.
Yeah.
And there's probably another module that's talking
to
that
closed
hardware.
X. I got that figured out.
Okay.
I'll close X because they told you that's a big
There still might be another module in memory at the time. It might not be used. So you might have to do a RM mod or mod probe --- remove and remove a module that has to do with your video card. Remove that one first.
Anything more exciting happen in your life this week?
Hey, we're talking Linux. I'm sorry if we're not getting over to your beer stuff.
Well,
I'm just going to run into the fact that every time he boots up, in order to make his NVIDIA driver work, they'll have to mod it. Or if they think it'll be smart enough to know that.
It sounds like an everyday thing they're doing. But anyway, all right, let's move on.
What else besides?
No, that was for computer stuff. That's about the extent of what I did.
My guess is there's a module. Just needs to be unloaded in the dark.
All right, pass.
Thank you.
I already did mine half an hour.
Well, repeat it. I wasn't here.
I was talking about XFCE Ubuntu. Running on a Pentium 3 866, and I was ripping DVDs.
Oh, you were open sourcing your stuff.
I was open sourcing. Well, yeah.
Backing them up.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Sorry.
Well, I was trying to get them so I could play my popcorn number. So, and I noticed that it looked better if instead of playing it through my DVD player, that it looked better if I, ripped it and re-encoded it. And I was saying it took like 40 hours to do one. Mm-hmm. Depending on the length of the movie, but one was the longest one was 40 hours.
Yeah, it might be better if you rip it out, should work. You might have better servers there.
So you think it looked better because it was digital, or
I don't
the digital
know, just,
signal?
Well, because the DVD player does 40i, right?
Okay.
And so does the DVD, but it seemed like it almost
how
had
did you How do you have your DVD connected?
Just an S-Video.
It's an S-Video cable, okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a regular $30 DVD player.
Right.
So it just seemed looking better.
And then you're playing it through the popcorn hour. How is that connected?
Oh, HDMI.
Yeah, okay.
Well, I don't think that has anything.
Well, that might actually, that does make a difference. Like on my projector, I've got a DVI cable and a VGA cable. And the VGA cable, you can actually see the difference. It's lower quality because it's an analog signal going from the computer to the projector.
See, I always thought it was like 40i, didn't matter.
A digital 480i will look better than analog 480i
because
there's
be
no
converted.
Yep, there's no degradation at all. Whereas an analog, you'll get some.
You have to get those DVD players that up convert that. I guess they say triple line them or whatever. And it almost seemed like that was that the handbrake was almost doing that when it was putting in.
It could be doing that too.
So it just looked.
Right, and that'll look crisper too, because then you can get that under digital.
I don't think that's correct, because then you don't have a need to buy Blu-ray. And then
you
have to spend your $35 on DVD. I don't think that's correct.
Well, I have the Fire Bay, so I don't need to buy Blu-ray.
The whole concept of Blu-ray is just a little bit of a farce. I mean, if you get DVD players that can up-convert to the full resolution of, like, 1080p, then really... okay, so maybe a little bit of color depth might be the difference or whatever, but really, is the little bit of color depth difference
unless you have a
an
really
extra $300?
Unless you have a big screen and you sit close to it, you're not going to notice the difference.
Well, it is the same argument. What was Wii and PS3? Everybody was saying, oh, nobody will buy Wii because it's such a low resolution. It's going to look ugly. And PS3, everybody's going to buy because it's gorgeous. And it came down to a content. And if you don't have a content and it looks beautiful, guess what? You don't have a content. If you have a content and it looks ugly, well, people want to have a content. That's all.
Yeah.
And price. PS3 demos like twice as much.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
That's ridiculous. Cool.
And the XFCE, if anybody's had a chance to use Ubuntu, it's just awesome on older hardware. It just,
yep.
It's just so fast.
Just a little bit problem to double around, you know, XFCE. It's just a little bit different, but it's another problem of XFCE. It's a problem getting used to stuff. Cool. How are you?
Nothing too exciting.
You didn't compile Xorg driver?
Sorry about that.
I stick with Windows for my video cards.
I set up some Linux database servers, nice ones over 50 or 60 gig RAM total between them. Two or three of them.
Cool. Great. How about you? What did you want to say?
I guess I've been working on something for work. It's actually not really Linux kosher. I have it running in OS X right now on a virtual machine. It's
tracking
software and a GPS antenna that we're trying to sell to sheriff's departments, basically.
That's
a
GPS receiver right there?
Yeah, it's a USB GPS modem. A GPS antenna, and then it comes with tracking software that will track all of your other antennas.
Does it do like a log at this time at this location?
Yeah, it'll log locations. You can get discrete antennas that magnetically mount people's cars, basically like a little jack.
So it's to keep an eye on all the cars in the fleet or something?
All the cars in the fleet, or it seems like you could monitor. Like, if you had a warranty thing, LoJack somebody's car and follow them, basically.
Or, well, this is what you can do, actually. If you are working for Sheriff's Department, you can actually use it and Twitter where you are. Actually, this could Twitter for you.
Yeah. You could keep track of your ex-wife.
Oh, of yourself?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, your rebellious teenage kids.
Yeah. How does that communicate back,
though? There's a location for application that holds your location to a central server.
But you still need to be connected somewhere.
Yeah.
So this little thing
that you're a cellular data plan.
Okay.
So you use cellular phone towers to communicate back?
Well, you can use cellular, you can use two-way radio, satellite, and it's a big enough vehicle.
So how big is this thing you put on the car?
Well, it has to house the battery and a cellular.
Where do you put the thing? On the roof or what?
This you can mount basically anywhere on the side of the car. I think it works inside the car.
Yeah, probably. GPS.
That's actually the GPS for it.
But yeah, but what about the rest of the thing that transmits out to the cell phone?
That's usually mounted in the trunk. That it has an antenna.
Oh, okay, so this isn't just something you could magnetically stick under the car.
Well, there is one.
Oh, there is?
It just sticks under the car. It's like this big.
There's one underneath the car right now, so he can't talk about it. He'll demo it really well later.
So, right, yeah, I also sell
with the fast pickup.
Solar powered.
Oh, really? Yeah. Cool. Anything else? Any other fun?
Not so much. Working a lot of overtime.
Drinking some fun beers?
Some extra barrel.
Extra barrel. Cool. Well, I didn't do too much, but I managed to. It's kind of a sad story, but my wife was actually buying. At her work, they actually put a collection together, and they had enough money to buy somebody an ultra portable laptop, and I steer her to a Dell website. And as we see, this one is main page of Dell. And when you go to Ultra Portables, can you guys read what kind of operating systems are there on the same page?
Genuine Windows XP.
There's Ubuntu on the far left.
Ubuntu.
Yeah, on the same page, side by side.
And if you look customized with Ubuntu up there, the nice big.
Yeah.
Two bottom options. It's so $249 and $299. That's not bad.
Well, there's the price. $250 is compared to $300.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And actually, I managed to persuade her to buy Ubuntu just for the purpose that notebooks or the netbooks are not really, you know, those are just communication devices, most likely. So, and I said, does my computer do anything what you would do on the other operating system? She said, yeah. So I said, well, you still have the benefit of not having a viruses. And I guess there it is.
Well, we got the one in the third column that says customize with XP. What does that mean?
Customize the laptop details with Windows XP.
Yeah,
like that, or RAM, or stuff like that.
Just, you are looking at the wrong column. That's all what I can tell you.
Okay.
All right. You can't run anything with some
Ubuntu, which is awesome.
As well as that there is a Mini 12. So that one is Mini 9-inch screen. And this one is 12-inch. And this one is the same thing, actually. Ubuntu and Windows, side by side.
So laptops started out small, grew to the size of a desktop, and now they're shrinking right now.
Did the other ones, I say they have the
actually, price started,
do you know if they drop in price
to go into it all? I have no idea. So, this one is
took an upturn there
470.
The whole desktop.
So, if we go this way, so it drops out.
It's massively huge style.
Yeah. So, I just, it was just nice that you actually people don't have to hunt and peck wherever it is, and so you actually can go there on the same page like anybody else is buying. You can actually have it side by side. It is not on XPS yet.
One just tidbit, if you ever do buy a laptop from Dell, like I got this one from Dell, and this is before they were offering Ubuntu, or maybe it was, but they didn't have it on this one. If you actually call up or talk to them, you can get it without Windows. It'll come with like a DOS CD or something, and you save $5, and you save like $100. So,
wow.
If you're stuck with Linux on it.
To just avoid the operating system.
Yeah, they don't give you a Windows license with it.
The Windows tax.
Free DOS. Yeah, they give you a free DOS. But you save, you know, almost $100. I think it was there $70 or something.
Is there a bigger savings when you go for a Vista machine? You know, like non-Vista?
Oh.
Not buying Vista, that is.
Right, I heard it was more expensive actually to not get Vista.
It was more expensive to not get Vista.
That's so I ran some Vista for a while. That might.
I don't know if they can do
because
that.
Because of the whole bundled software.
I don't know.
They pay for the premium software.
Well, I've seen that where it says that you can put the XP on there for $100.
It depends on if you account for pain and suffering in the equation.
That's true.
Yeah.
Pain and suffering all aside, you know. That's a good 5-6 hours of unconfiguring things.
Because I know the Microsoft agreement with vendors like that is that if the customer does not want the Microsoft license, they must give them a rebate or a refund.
I think they're forced to do that.
But along with that, they also say that they're not able to divulge how much their Windows licenses actually cost them. So in most cases, it's not costing Dell as much for the Windows license as you're getting the refund for. So they're actually biting on some of it.
Yeah.
So I just mileage may vary.
I just thought it was very nice move, very positive move, and probably
is that the first time ever that something on that scale
the first time
Linux
ever
has happened.
The first time ever I saw it just side by side. Yes. Yes.
Cool.
So it is great, I think.
Yeah.
And I did a newsletter. There was some actually. Some interesting article in his letter, but we go through his letter and talk about. But
some interesting stuff in here.
Yeah, and then yes, I brewed a beer. Yes, on Saturday. Sorry to say that Linux went on the back burner, and I brewed a beer. It was Bohemian Pilsner. We shall see how Bohemian we are going to be.
I knew it.
You won. Yes,
I knew it.
Absolutely. Well, the second week, you know, I had a urge. Cool, and that's all I have.
Cool. I, in the last half an hour or so, got Voxy working.
Oh, sweet, yeah.
With streaming Netflix. So this is movie next. It's Nicolas Cage.
You have a Netflix account?
Yeah, I signed up for one just to see.
So you're actually right now renting a Netflix movie?
Right.
So with Voxy?
Right, with Voxy.
So is this on OS X Voxy or Linux
Voxy? Yes, this is OS X. I haven't downloaded Voxy for Linux yet.
what's Foxy? Just like a video front, like a center front end or something?
Yeah, it's like a DVR functionality, except for it's way, way more versatile because you can do video from
media player. Okay.
Yeah. There's like by default
with a social network.
It's an infrared.
You can see with your friends out watching it and recommend too.
So you can like this is all the streaming video sources.
Yeah,
there's BBC, CBS, CNN, Comedy Central, Hulu, Netflix, MySpace, MyFeed, Revision 3 if you're like a Dig Nation fan.
Oh, I love that. The Dig Reel is the best.
Does this work with the Linux?
Juiced? I don't know. I haven't tried that one.
So that's all from Boxy?
Yeah. The Boxy provides the interface. All the sources that you saw is this.
All that stuff is open, right? This is just bringing it all together.
This is like a fancy interface to stream content online.
It's like a competition, or not a competition, but competitive men.
Eventually, what I'd like to do is I want to get like
a real killer.
If I could find like a real cheap like Mac Mini or something like that. The Mac Mini is like 8 inches by 8 inches by 3 inches. It's a tiny little form factor machine. Use like Boxy to hook it up. It's got a DVI connection on it. And then hook that up to like a big screen TV. That's the long term goal.
Use so it'd just be like a mini monitor.
Right. Boxy also plays Xvid, DivX, you know, H.264, just about any form of codec that you can throw at it, as well as all of your music and everything,
Popcorn
artists and
like
albums
that,
from your iTunes accounts. So like you know.
Popcorn have a screen on it, or is it just a box?
Is this free or
the
Boxy is free.
So
yes, but it is
screen.
You have to sign
and
up.
A little revolt like
when
that.
I signed up, it took probably 3 or 4 weeks for me actually to get the email for the login, because what they said is it's been enormously popular and they wanted to scale their growth.
You know, I
by
think that they
the number of people.
I think that they opened it already. That it used to be that you had to wait the like waiting period.
I signed up a while ago and it was instant. So yeah.
Was it?
A couple weeks back. Yeah. Actually,
you
after you showed up the first time.
Okay.
Cool.
It's boxy.tv. B-O-X-E.
So that remote is part of your computer?
Yeah.
Came with the computer?
Yeah.
Well, you know, you were saying about Beats TV. This would be like a front end of Beats TV.
Yeah.
It's not a rip thing.
It's another interface from
essentially, instead of running your own server that does all the TV, this just goes out to the internet and gets it.
Yeah, that's the other difference. MIF TV is a source of cable TV or satellite.
I think that it would go also if you were to have your own server, it would actually cache whatever is in your server.
Yeah, that's the other thing. I have a 1 terabyte RAID 5 server at home that has a bunch of perfectly legal backed up copies of DVDs that I own.
Open source?
Yes, open source, yes. And that's. You know, what you can do in the settings of Boxy is you can set it up to add certain other media sources. So then, like, if it's a network source, you can add it as, like, a Samba share or an NFS share or something like that. And then, you know, you can watch your library of movies on the interface. So you've got your front end, which is the box that just plays it from whatever source. And then you've got the, you know, the back end, which is the storage.
What are the requirements on that? Could I run a Pentium 3
866?
Looking at those graphics, I'm going to say no.
Hey, Adam, I have a bad news for you. It's written in Python.
Jesus Christ.
Who doesn't like Python?
Really?
It's not that he doesn't like Python. He doesn't like how some programs are written. Because
Python is the BB of the new millennium.
It doesn't.
It allows people who shouldn't program to write programs.
It doesn't force you to actually confirm a certain standard.
I think some of my favorite softwares written in Python. It's just some of my least favorite software.
It's like one of the best languages, in my opinion, there are right now.
It's great, but at the other time, it allows.
It could be abused.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I have so many programs that just kind of go away and throw errors.
Well, that's why you have all the same feature and restore. Right after that,
isn't that built into Python? Even mono
yes,
drives me nuts to some degree. You know, when you have to go to the command line to start a program to figure out what went wrong, and somebody didn't code it right, and actually that was a Fedora packaging issue with Banshee that forced me.
Hey,
to do that.
At least you can go to the command line.
At least
unlike Windows, you type in a command there and it crashes. Too bad.
You know what? I have a news for you. There is a. Mono develop 2.0 beta.
Did it have a debugger?
Going on. I don't know. I was
the beta doesn't the full release will. That's the thing. Their beta doesn't have a working debugger.
But 1.0 didn't have working debugger, but did it?
Yes, it did.
I think so.
Everything has a working debugger except for 2.0 beta. That's the only version that doesn't.
Of course, it's supposed to be running beta. Yeah, that's supposed to be running beta like that.
Question
of course.
Did that Hulu and Netflix support come native to the install? Or did you have to go out and install more plugins?
The link to the website was there, but you have to log in through.
Oh, yeah.
So,
but
do you need to have a account on Hulu?
You don't have to, don't have but to. For like rated R content, you have to log in, which is free.
We see you.
So if you're an avid porn guy, you know, you gotta...
Well, if you want to watch Family Guy.
Family's practically, Family Guy's practically porn. It's a terrible show.
That remote
you need to leave.
What is that? That remote comes with your laptop, you bought it?
Yes, it did.
That's actually $1,000 worth of right?
Yeah.
No, it was $20.
Huh.
Just could have skipped it.
And here's the cool thing. It works on every Apple, just straight up. So you can use
it. Yeah, you have to sync it, it's just playing.
Yeah, his will go to front end. Not front end. What's the app?
What's it called?
I'm trying to think.
Front row.
Yeah, front row.
There's an Apple interface that has a similar DVR functionality, except it just looks at your iPhoto photos and your iMusic library.
That reminds me of like Elijah. The same. UI like Elijah.
Front row.
That looks like mid TV.
It looks like they just like changed the theme, and that's it. There's a theme that looks identical.
Netflix thing too, which would be nice to stream some kind of 360. So
I like the Apple solution pretty well. Apple TV is the TV version, and which plays out to 720p, and you can rent 720p movies directly on the device, which is kind of nice.
Oh, so Apple TV does 720p now?
Yeah, it was it.
Oh, I thought it did 480 when it first came out.
Yeah.
Cool. Thank you. Mm-hmm. How's the new daddy doing?
Pretty good. Alright, baby's, over 2 weeks old now, so...
And as a remote control in the house, you just need to trade it? Kind of expensive remote control, should I say?
Yeah. This is number 3, so we have 2 diaper remote controls right now.
Yeah.
Throw that away. Yes. No, we're all doing pretty well. Mom's not getting a whole lot of sleep, but I managed to sneak an hour here or there, so when she's not watching.
We see dedication. You are going to have a case of beer for me then.
Alright, so other than that, I've been watching the beta release of the Eureka backup here. I have designs to go in and actually write a CIFS or Samba Share plugin for the program, because I'm getting sick of hacking my own scripts together to mount shares to do backups to. And
I'm
addicted to the program.
Is
I love
Java,
the, Eureka. It's Eureka backup. It's a backup utility written in Java that can configure incremental and differential backups and recoveries, and I think it's really slick. You can get some pretty complicated setups.
It doesn't
going
have autosave feature. Sorry, it's Java. If it crashes, it tells you it crashed.
You know, from a Windows machine, you can just point to a share of a network.
Java, you just throw a try catch on a
backup server.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a client, but but it's got built-in FTP support and then local. Yeah. Right now, that's it. So I played around with setting an FTP server up, and
is that like SSH support or like
anything? No. That's another thing. Either I need to write a... I was reading around a little bit, and the guy's got an API written.
Sure.
You can essentially write a plugin, create an XML file, and it should show up in the interface as use my new file system plugin I wrote here. So I'm going to mess around with that in a couple weeks here. But he's releasing version 7, which is some kind of huge memory management improvement.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, tell him about JCraft.
I was going through some of the codes in like Italian or something. I don't know what it was, but it was.
So send him a pizza.
I'll have to figure it out. Yeah. So I've been messing with that, and I guess the other thing was yesterday or the day before, I found, going through my emails that I hadn't been watching here, Fluendo had sent me a notice. I bought their codec pack almost a year ago, and they now have pre-packaged codecs you can get from them. Instead of, it used to be you downloaded the C compiled or the C plugins, you actually had to move them to the folder.
Blender Shop.
Yep. You can get the free MP3 ones there as a plugin, too. But they've got them pre-compiled, pre-packaged for Ubuntu, Debian, Fedora, SUSE, Mandriva, and even Solaris.
They did DVD. Are they like more efficient or something? Or
it's basically GStreamer codecs is what they are. It's not that they're more efficient; it's just that they're legal.
Never,
I don't know. I mean, it's.
So you bought 32-bit. Can you actually
there
say...
There is 64-bit. I can download the 64-bit or the 32 without having to buy new ones. Yeah, I can.
So download it before your thing expires.
If you go to their homepage there, the end-user products, they're announcing there's a DVD player as well here. They don't have it done yet, but they're saying it'll be available to OEM as well as just consumer level, which is probably a first as far as I'm aware of.
So I can delete my libDVD
CSS.
Actually, it's some kind of funny program. It's RPM file. I don't play.
Yeah. So it's. Right now, if you want, you know, quote unquote legal DVD playback, the only way to get it is if you buy OS from Dell.
Yes.
And maybe one or two. I know Mandriva, you can get it with. And
I own so many copies of Power DVD.
Yeah, so all you have to do is say, you know, I got the software here, go with. But I, you know, it is kind of a nice thing to see. And if it's easy to get, easy to integrate, you know, my guess is that more either Linux shops or distributions will start integrating it.
Yeah, it'd be nice if they just paid a bunch of money and so you know, we can see just how far we went. You know, when we started it to meet, you know, 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago. You know, what were we talking about? We're talking about, oh, maybe somebody will be selling hardware with a Linux on.
Remember that discussion?
Yeah. You know, and right now we are saying, well, it would be nice if somebody would get me this application. You know, so.
Yeah, I was pretty happy to when going through their site here to see these things on here. So I have a codec support on my Fedora VM at home now, so
cool.
I can play my MP3 files. Don't have to worry about it. But and now I can put up a Solaris machine and listen to my MP3s on it too. So.
See, Solaris is actually kind of cool, especially for database servers. A lot of people have been talking to using it.
It's
properly operating.
Once it starts up, ZFS takes a little bit to get going, but it's.
That's the big stuff.
If it's a server though, you're not rebooting.
Yeah,
it.
ZFS is.
Well, no, but
and it's
super. Still like snapshot support.
They've actually got some nice tools in, was it 2008.11 for managing some of the ZSF stuff?
I haven't really used it too much.
But they actually built some GUI interfaces to do some of those ZFS things instead of
That's really what the new file system, ButterFS is basing itself off of, is ZFS.
Cool.
If someone would just open source their stuff, they'd probably do a lot better.
Very nice.
Open source Java. What more do you want?
They like to
Java's fine.
They like to shoot themselves in the foot over and over again before they finally give up and say, "All right, now they." So.
All right. There's no more space left in my foot. I guess
everybody's circumvented us, anyways. Here you go. Now it's open source. Yeah.
When you were going through this, I saw
almost
like
they see it as giving up. It's like, all right, it's fine.
Yeah.
That's kind of with the OpenJDK, you know.
They
had their certain.
They
I mean, you could get it for free and use it, but they had their restrictions on it. And eventually, people just started to work around it, and then
they were
like,
to the point
now
where
you can have it. So.
Yeah, they were to the point where they had a working, completely free version, and Sun went, "Oh, that's no good," because the free version you could actually compile the native code too. You didn't actually need the JVM at all. It was compiled in with the program.
You can always get the Java source code, though, right?
There's like parts of it you can't.
You always could.
I don't know if you can
get the source code. I don't think it was open source.
There's
certain, it wasn't open source,
but
you could always get it.
You could get it.
There are still a few
because there's certain things, if you go download the source...
What they're doing is they're replacing those pieces with the pieces from the...
OpenJDK.
OpenJDK versions.
There's some like file transfer
protocols,
the SSH
transfer
protocol.
See, actually,
iced tea thing or something, is that part of it?
Yeah. That's the free version.
Oh, it's the solid state drive.
This is 9, but if I picked the XP and I say customize it with Ubuntu, it actually kept the instant saving also for $25. And I was able to up my memory, my hard drive.
So for so 400 bucks, you can
get a laptop with a solid state.
32 gig.
For 64 gig solid state for another 50 bucks.
Yeah, that's wow.
That's actually pretty impressive.
Usually don't see a drive. An 8 gig solid state driver costs you $400 at the time. Well, not anymore, but you know.
Well, those first EE PCs, they came with a 4 gig, and that 8 gig was like big boost.
Yeah.
Man's Triple E's got 20 total, the 16 and a 4.
Yeah, that was the.
Yep. Apple's markups for solid state drives are horrible. They're super, super expensive.
That's Apple for you.
Yeah.
It comes with a wheel on them.
Let's see. I want bit number 3. Oh, wheel it. Okay, plug it in. Yep.
Because you need to have a hook of dexterity. You need to have tactile.
I put
on. Oh, so and onto Python here before. I think Conduit.
It's awesome.
Written in Python, I believe. Right?
See, well, you love Conduit.
I like the idea of Conduit. I just can't get it to work.
And
it doesn't actually throw any error messages or anything. It just kind of sits there and looks at
it. Well, try catch Conduit.
It's a synchronization program, and it's actually pretty slick because
it has different endpoints and source points, and you just
like either folders. They've got built-in plugins for like your F-Spot or Picasa pictures or your Tomboy notes.
YouTube logins. They've got if you've got a Palm.
Basically, rsync with a fancy interface. Okay. So you drag your Tomboy notes into the synchronization area, and then you drag in like a network connection, and it just draws a line between them.
Facebook
so it visually
stuff.
Represents all
so
things.
So it's like just all connections between all these different programs and devices.
Problem I'm having with it is on the Ubuntu side, it seems to work on Fedora. I cannot get it to recognize a network shared synchronization. So essentially, what you do is I'm trying to synchronize my photos. So I drag my photos into the work area, then drag the network connection into it, and it outputs that synchronization as a Avahi. What do they call that? The Avahi, the zero config browser, it uses that to broadcast over the network. And Ubuntu will see it, but another Fedora machine won't pick it up, so I don't know if there's something.
Do you have the service enabled? The zero conf service?
I didn't look at the service.
You might want to take a look and see if that's enabled, because otherwise that zero conf might not even work.
Okay, because I know I have the zero conf packages installed.
I don't know that the service is started up by default.
That might be, because it's broadcasting it, it just can't pick it up. So that might be something. I'll look at that later. But so on Ubuntu, I see it, but when I connect to it, try to synchronize it, it just kind of sits there. It doesn't do anything. So I'm trying to figure out why it's not doing anything. So, and it's still technically, beta, but it's been around for a couple of years.
Yeah,
so I would think at least.
Beta.
Yeah,
it's Python.
Python
is a beta. You guys are too harsh.
They need to go back to Perl.
Perl.
Why do you need Python when you've got Perl?
Yeah, absolutely. You need Python.
Hold on.
That's the whole reason.
You don't like Python, but you like Perl.
But I love
it. Do you know why? Because nobody can read it.
Nobody can. I can't even read it.
Perl.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
You don't get complete beginners writing Perl programs usually. Okay.
I was going to say that's what I learned about it was Perl.
Finish
that
one.
Yeah.
That's when I broke
my
team.
I had a couple programs a year or two ago I wrote in Perl, and if I opened them now, I wouldn't understand. They're all regular expressions.
Hopefully you commented it out.
It's like
equals tilde slash.
What does this do? I don't know, but it makes a 12 gig file. It's full of all kinds of stuff. So.
Sounds like a planet.
I think it parses the internet.
And tries to back it up too.
Every duck.
Do it with pearls.
I actually got my projector control to work through the serial interface. So I've got a serial cable running from my MythBox to the projector, and through software I'm able to fully control the projector. So what I did was I went to the LERT configurations, the Linux infrared remote something, I don't know what C stands for.
and set it up so that the power button on the MythBox remote will actually turn on the projector. And then I set up all my other buttons, and then I went into the Myth main menu, and their menu system is all XML driven, and you can actually alter what options are there just right in the XML. So I modified the XML to have a projector off command. So right from the main menu, I can just select projector off, click on it, and everything closes down. What that does is it completely gets rid of the projector remote and gives full control to the PC. Turns out the problem I was having, why it didn't work before, there were actually two problems, which is the reason why it's difficult to troubleshoot. First off, the serial ports on Linux, apparently, well, there's a maximum speed, and it's like 115,200. That's like the maximum speed of the serial port. But manufacturers wanted to go above that. So what they did was they added a non-standard base speed for the serial port, and then they used a divisor or divisor to divide that base speed. Now, normally it assumes that it's set to 115,000, but the base was actually set to this other number, which wasn't a even divisor or divisor of the first number, so I was getting not exactly 9600 baud, I was getting like 7000 baud, which isn't good enough. So I reset the base speed, got that all working, and then I found out that this stupid document that I had from Optima, the maker of my projector, was the wrong spec sheet. It said it was the right spec sheet, but it wasn't. So I was sending it the wrong commands. So I found another similar projector, and I looked, and all the menus were identical to the one I had, whereas the other spec sheet, the menus were not identical. So I tried that out, and I was able to get it to work. So
did you get a $50 discount from your...
I should have gotten a $50 discount, because I probably worked on that thing for 8 to 10 hours getting it to work. But I got it, darn it. I was dedicated. Well, the problem being that something goofs up the projector remote. Like, it reads some light somewhere. I can't figure out what it is. And it disables the projector remote. Which is really annoying because the projector is on the ceiling. Now, that's fine. Except I'm moving and the ceilings are vaulted. So now, I'm going to have the, you know, the alternate remote,
you know,
with the rubber finger.
If you would have very, very sports-like child, you know,
just on the shoulders,
yeah, just jump there,
hit the power, Johnny. Yeah. But anyway, now I got it so that it completely works through the PC and shouldn't need the remote at all.
You know, I think, okay, well, I wanted to suggest that I set my brood there when you need it, but, okay. Well.
No, I'm good, thanks.
Okay. Okay.
I appreciate the offer. But.
Cool. Hmm. Sounds like a plan. Do we have any XOR discussion ready? Ready, so I get whatever he wants to do with it.
It's a little tech TV guy before they turn
to... Yes, it used to be tech TV, and then right now it's Leo.tv.
Is it the Leo guy?
No. It used to be Patrick Norton, but he left.
Classic.
TV.
Yeah. It was actually a technology show instead of a
training
show.
It is technology
show.
So,
Robert Hare. The channel was Robert Hare instead of...
I don't have time to watch
it anymore
because I need a group here.
Oh, we all have priorities.
Yeah, technology. Who cares?
You said it used to be Patrick Norman.
Yes.
Yeah. You have Street Service?
Yeah.
I Leo Laporte. That was the other guy.
Leo Laporte.
Yep. I watched.
They were back.
I listened to a lot of his podcasts. Yeah. So
really,
he's got 11.
At Leoville or whatever.
Yeah, Leoville.tv I think is his main URL. But I mean, he's got This Week in Tech and Mac Break Weekly and. You know, there's a Linux one, and there's a Windows one.
I think it's twit.tv.
Twit.tv is the main Twit network one.
I actually used to learn something watching that show.
Yeah, you used to learn.
And now it's more like the Hulu commercial with Alec Baldwin. Have you seen that?
That is so
That's funny. Basically all I get out of G1 now.
Is that the one where he's like, what, aliens or something?
Like, turn your brain to money.
Yeah, I thought
it was the weirdest way to promote something as cool as Hulu.
Alec Baldwin.
I mean, seriously.
I think that's what it is. It's him from the show, and it's... If you've seen the show, it's pretty...
Okay, so I'm going to TV. Awesome. Yeah, Detroit. With security. Now with Steve Gibson? Yeah, that's
well, I used to, but then he sort of... Steve Gibson? Yeah, started to stutter too much, and he...
The security guy?
From the beginning, it was great, actually. Yeah. He was saying how TCPIT is working, and he was talking about encryptions and virtualization.
Well, yeah,
from the beginning. But then it sort of got out of whack. I don't care what security issues, but you just threw stuff out of
the floor. You don't like him either?
No.
Jeez! I think he's awesome. So, two people that don't like
him. Did he buy spinner from him?
No. Why? No.
Yeah, because that's almost what it is right now, all of them.
No, it's not.
Yeah.
Jeez! He talks about it because he needs money to do the show.
Through the show, he's promoting his spin right. That's
it.
It's
a great
one to
Steve Gibson. Well, no, he's a great guy, but he's around.
I've never seen the show. Like, he's probably pretty informative, but like, he's had a lot of. There's been numerous situations where he's really. There's been news stories where he's just really wrong, and I can't think of the word where he just makes it sound like he's a real travesty or something really bad.
Over exaggerated.
Oh, yeah, that's
yeah. And you know, that's from the beginning he was very good. You know, he did know what he was talking about, and he knew how to say it clear. But then he has a show every week, so you need to put a content there. So what am I going to do? Well, there's nothing new to do, so we need to make something up. Yes. And then let it start.
In the computer security circles, he's kind of like regarded as a joke.
Well,
but if you learn something from him,
there's nothing wrong to it.
It's not like he's necessarily wrong about certain things. It's just, if you get value out of him, then.
Was there some specific event? Like, was he hacked or something that made
The big thing was he made a big deal. I remember it was about when Windows XP was coming out, that supported raw socket support. And apparently that was going to be the end of the world, and hackers were just going to take over Windows, and everyone's going to be insecure, and that's not really how it works. But that was one of the big things.
But he stopped it. You know, he put his foot down and he stopped it. Everything is good.
Yeah.
World made equilibrium, and we are happy to be living again. Yeah.
No, he does talk about the raw socket.
Still.
Okay, let's move on.
Let's just shut our computers down and then we'll say, what do we have them for? We can't connect to them, we can't do anything.
So, who's going to start?
Start what?
Well, the Debian
the
5 was released.
Debian?
I don't use that crap.
Will anybody use Debian?
Everybody who's been using Linux,
Ubuntu is based on Debian. It's pretty used. In Silicon Valley, it's used a lot.
So, the Debian is the package manager part of Ubuntu?
No.
It's a distribution.
It's basically Ubuntu. Like, it's what Ubuntu is based off of.
It's like the mother of.
Yes.
A lot of different distributions, including
Debian. I thought it was either Debian or RPM.
Well, that's the package manager. The package manager came from Debian.
If you go back to Ubuntu 6.06, you're probably using the current version of Debian. So the plus side is it's going to be really stable. I mean, because
everything
in it's been
about 2 years since they've updated.
But you know, you don't have to mount your own USB stick anymore.
No. It's not so much a desktop.
The package manager is, or the packages for the install are just named the same. Because they originally came from Debian Linux, so they're named Debian package files.
Debian is absolutely
okay. Ubuntu is just not a base distribution, it comes from something else. Whereas Red Hat.
Think of it the same way.
SUSE's a base.
Same way, RPM actually stands for Red Hat. Package manager.
Okay.
So it came from Red Hat. Debian DB came from Debian Linux.
Interesting.
It's okay. Everything's fine.
Tibian is kind of like Red Hat.
Yeah, we are going to call Sid Gibson right now as our world would reach equilibrium. So that's okay.
Take a look at the map of all the different Linux variants. You'll see exactly where Debian came from. Yeah. Actually,
Debian is kind of like Red Hat Enterprise, and Ubuntu is kind of like Fedora.
Yeah, sure. Let's move on.
Ubuntu is based off the testing branch of Debian.
Yeah, let's move on.
Hold on.
If you're using Ubuntu,
now.
You're
okay.
A beta tester, really.
Our
it's Fedora.
Yep. Same thing.
Our Fedora man is going to tell us about Debian.
No, I'm just going to. I'm looking for a picture here.
Yeah.
A picture is worth a thousand words.
Yeah.
Like a tree?
Yeah, they
yeah.
have one.
I think Debian is one of the first branches from them.
Yep, that's exactly what I'm looking at is the Linux distro time.
Another branch is your Red Hat, so there's another
distro
branch. SUSE is considered as its own.
Where's Red Hat?
Slackware is considered as its own. They have a lot of derivatives that.
WineReviews.net, I don't know how that. So, it's going to be kind of hard to see. I'll just.
If there's still Gen 2.
Holy shit. You see, these are all the different Linux distros.
Yeah, it's sort of.
I had installed it on Xbox. But
this is the Red Hat.
Zebian? No, it was.
Right at the base, this is.
What they call it?
So all of these distros.
It was a Gen 2 derivative of the original Xbox.
Oh, it was Debian. All
no.
of these distros actually.
There's a specialized
that.
Distribution
what's
put on the original Xbox, and it was a Gentoo derivative.
Those are some of the other ones.
I think it was
like
Susie.
Susie here. No.
Yeah, I can't remember.
Blackware.
I think it's a ridiculous operating system. But
so there's a bunch of other ones that
Gentoo
kind of.
Well,
some
people used to love it because you
compile
on your own hardware.
Debian
is
ridiculous.
Well,
I mean,
the
size things it makes.
It's
really kernel and maybe a couple like bare things.
If you like GCC's
anyone that's under this branch
24 hours,
anyone that's under this branch.
I think they made a lot of leaps and bounds when they created a live CD. To do the base. But one of the biggest disadvantages of Gentoo is the initial install because you've got to compile
like that's the base
from the beginning. But a while ago they came out with a live CD. Which basically has
okay.
a lot of base of like the most when, common i3s,
32-bit
downloaded bin files
more or, less.
Or whatever.
Where's that?
I mean, whatever the
compiled
versions are.
I don't know.
And then
actually,
that's
here.
In turn
yep,
help them get up and running, and then from there you can add it on programs.
Gentoo used to be a very popular distribution.
Yeah, and there was a problem with their. One of the lead programmers had like a heart attack. There was some major health problem.
That
like really set them back, and I think that's when they really lost steam, and that's when Ubuntu kind of took off.
Yeah,
so I think that was one of the things that really kind of hit them in the head.
Yeah, yeah. And right now, I know that they lost their foundation as a nonprofit organization status, and you know, it just was going down the hill. I don't know, you know, where they are right now, but it's in sort of
what
Gentoo. You know, while you guys were looking at picture, you know, which so we were moving on. So there was something about Red Hat and Microsoft patent or they partnered up. And the thing was, they were saying that actually Red Hat didn't actually sign up any licensing agreement. So they were saying in virtualization, we are partnered with you, and we are going to work on interoperability. That's a big word for me.
Yeah, I read that, and it's just kind of they both decided that it's the best if we validate one version of your software on ours, and you validate one version of our software on yours.
Yeah,
it's just a good business sense.
Well, somehow the Microsoft acknowledged they are mutual customers.
I don't think there's a whole lot of work to be done. I think it's more of a corporate feel good. You can call someone.
That's exactly what
this doesn't work good. And instead of getting, we don't support that operating system, you get what kind of
error? We'll look at it.
We'll look at it. Then they hang up.
Open up a ticket. We'll close it in about a month.
So, I mean, one of the things they were saying, well, guess what, you guys know, well, you had to exchange money here and there. Even though I do not understand, because I think that Novell was actually a recipient of more money than Microsoft. So, from that point, Novell was actually getting more money. But there was some indemnation thing with the Novell. So, they were saying that this is much better deal, whatever it is.
Red Hat pretty much came out and said to Microsoft, we'll deal with you, but you put patents in there and we're out. Because Red Hat has kind of got some ideals and they just won't back down.
Actually, Red Hat was trying for codexes. You know, that about a year and a half ago, they tried to release a desktop operating system. And it was hinging on the codexes, codec support. And they wanted to actually have some codec support from Microsoft. And Microsoft was just pushing that they want to have a patent in there. And Brendan just walked away.
Yep, exactly.
So then, I guess Microsoft learned that if they want something, that's what it is. Cool, good. Miro 2.0. Miro is another... Is that here?
Didn't like it.
It's actually another player. It's a streaming player. And I know that Mozilla invested some money into it some time ago. And so they have actually 2.0. There's your Hulu over there. And Family Guy probably.
So it's another version of Oxy?
No, it's a Miro. It's a player.
Oh, it's just a player. Okay.
It's a streaming
competitor
player.
To Oxy.
Yes.
It's less than a whole on media center thing. It's more of an application that you use. You probably wouldn't use it on your TV, whereas Boxy, you'd throw it on your TV. You would use it.
It depends what you want to do with it.
Is it Miro,
you
platform? Yeah.
Excuse me?
It was, wasn't it?
It's based on Mozilla, I think. Yes.
Is it browser based?
I don't know exactly how that works, but yeah,
I've got the 1.whatever version installed because it was in the Ubuntu repos, and
it's not a web app.
I'm afraid to start it just because the first time I started it, it just stole my processor.
In the older day, I started the app and I wasn't sure actually what it's supposed to be doing.
I couldn't get it to play anything.
Eight months ago, I was running it for a while. Worked fairly well as a BitTorrent client, and basically just a stream aggregator. And I had a decent interface. But
yeah.
I'm just playing around with Boxy now. That is much nicer than Miro was.
I like the interface. It's very clean.
Yeah.
I know that Mozilla has their entirely own widget set and everything too, so it might be using that. It might not actually be browser based. I don't know. I haven't looked at it.
So it was over there. There was an article about using DFLAIR diagramming. It appeared to be a very nice article. Very long article.
It's kind of useful.
It's kind of
difficult to use.
Is it?
I like OpenOffice Draw better for creating simple stuff.
I think they were talking about OpenOffice, but they were saying that DI is better than OpenOffice.
Well, it's better at some things.
Depends what you're doing.
I guess for the stuff that I was doing, the OpenOffice Draw actually worked better. But I can see there are some things where DI
works. The problem is for simple drawings, you're going to use, you know, an OpenOffice drawing program or something else. For software diagrams, you're going to use an IDE's diagramming tool. For, you know, electrical drawings, you're going to use something else. So,
yeah.
Question is kind of, what are you going to use DIA for? It's too complicated for little stuff.
And it's not quite
specialized enough for other things.
The only thing that would be really useful is if they actually had some nice clip art Nikon pieces, and they don't. So it's like, there's your niche, and you missed it. You missed the boat.
Don't worry, somebody will get, as a new developer, they'll start to rewrite it.
This has been around for a long time, and it really hasn't made any years.
Okay, let's go. There was another article about Buddy, personal finance, financial application.
Without a headache.
Well, if you have a headache, you install it and your headache. It's like aspirin, this thing. Your headache will go away. And so I heard about it, it's Java based, so it's perfect, you know, no exceptions. I would say that on Linux, probably the best financial application is MoneyDance, but you have to pay for it. You have to pay like $15 for it.
Mint.com.
Excuse Excuse me?
Mint.com.
Mint.com. I think I would stay away from there. But, well, if you enjoy it, it's great. It's a web-based, you can track your investments, you write your social security number, stuff like that.
Yeah. I'm sure it's not any different than the TurboTax I type by ringing into every day.
Yeah, I guess. There was something about raw image tools for Linux. On this article, there's nothing really new, but it's
there. Well, that number two there is kind of interesting. I installed that on Amanda's camera.
Did you?
What it is it's not a replacement firmware, but it's almost like a program that runs on top of the existing firmware.
Yes.
So it loads off of the flash disk or the SD card, and will give you additional features over what's already there.
And you can actually save it raw.
Yep, and that's one of the main things on that camera. There's no option to save in RAW. With this firmware or this program, you can actually save your images RAW. And there's a bunch of other things, like there's a few ISO settings and shutter speeds that you can't get with the built-in settings or the built-in firmware, and this will override it so that you can get those additional settings.
Yes.
You can also run scripts on your... camera.
I heard about it, and I guess I probably discovered that because I already can save RAW, so I sort of went through it, I read it.
Yep. Yeah. They really say that the most useful thing about that is the scripting, because you can set your camera up to take a shot every, 2 minutes or something. Or they have like a motion sensor script that you can put in there, get the results of the motion sensor, take photos on motion sense, and all sorts of stuff like that.
Standalone camera.
Yep.
It can?
Yep.
But it works only on Canon.
Monitors the pixels, and when it senses more of a, or greater than a certain threshold of change between two pixels, then it considers that the frames have changed.
You need to have a Canon camera which is using this processor.
Yep.
Three processors.
Right, and most Canon cameras that you get are going to have that. Anything in about the 150 to... whatever range are going to have that.
So like digital cameras or like DSLRs?
SLRs do have those same ones. Okay. A friend of ours has remember the model number. It's about he paid about $1,500 for it. So it's a nice camera, and it has the Digic 3.
Wow.
Which Amanda's camera has the Digic 3 as well, and that was like $350.
Is that like a Rebel or something?
No, it's PowerShot.
Have the first Rebel, and I don't think that I have this processor there. So, but I can shoot it in RAW, but I cannot do those sort of like motion.
It's not pretty, but does what it needs to do.
Yeah.
Could you break her?
Nope, because it doesn't replace the firmware that's there. It loads on top of it. So what you can do is. If the SD card is in and the SD card is write protected, it will read from the SD card and look for a certain file. If the certain file is there, it'll run it when the camera boots up. So all you have to do is switch
it. You need to have that SD card with that firmware there on all the time.
Yep. And if you take the SD card out, boot the camera, it starts up normally.
Wow.
And you haven't made any changes to it. Cool. So that's kind of cool.
That's nice.
So there's a file you store on that SD card.
Yep.
That you wrote.
Well, that they wrote, yeah.
Wow.
Their program interfaces
this program
with the camera.
Here.
Yeah, okay. Interfaces with the camera, and then you can put scripts on there that you write as well,
okay.
Or download or whatever.
And then they have the other application. I think this is library. DC RAW. I think that's the library.
Mm-hmm.
And this is application. That's actually plugging to Game RAW Studio.
Oh, are you kidding?
I don't know. RAW therapy, it sort of works and sort of doesn't work. Yeah, not sure what kind of license it is. It's sort of, I tried a few times. It wasn't done. This is actually photo management. It's an album. Picasa is an album. And RAW View, I did try RAW View. And this was kind of funky. I think RAW View is old. Yeah. But what I want, what I'm doing right now is that I stick it in Picasa, and I adjust it in Picasa, and then you can export. You know, you don't have to export your own pictures, but if you want to actually save them, you export it, and then you have your RAW and then your JPEG.
Yep.
So that's what I'll do, and because I used to have actually two different programs, and I spent hours and hours on it, and you know, that I didn't do it. You see that. That I have pictures up to here, and then from May last year, I didn't develop any pictures. I had to brew, you know. So that's what I do. I use Picasa, and it appears to be working quite well.
That's a Wine program, right?
Actually, I run through Wine, but you have a Linux zip package, so that that's a customized. But I run it through regular Wine Windows program.
So and that okay.
That appears to be working better than Linux version.
I thought like Google donated a lot of code to Wine because of
yes.
their
yes, absolutely. Yep. Yes.
Either go through Wine through their stuff or go through your own Wine.
I see.
And that's what I sort of figure out, you know, that they already contributed to Wine, so I'll use Windows program. And it actually has more features. Windows programs has more features than Linux program. Let's say they have this upload this movie. You can actually upload movie to your Picasa web, you know. But Linux program, I think, doesn't have it. So.
I've been back and forth between Picasa and F-Spot for the last year, probably. I think I've just settled on F-Spot because it's easier to manage stuff. Even in here, you know, if you get a couple thousand pictures in here, you're going to be.
I have a couple thousand.
Do you actually can do anything with them though? I mean, yeah. It's just a bunch of pictures splattered in there. So.
Well, it depends. I actually keep it. I organize it by year and month.
Yeah, you've got to manually organize all your folders.
And that's
which is
actually I do like organizing my pictures. I don't like to have magic. That's why when I'm done with adjusting here, I will export those pictures and I will actually keep them.
That's why I settled on F-Spot exactly is because you know what I don't want to manage them anymore.
So
I
what does F-Spot do?
I can't keep up with it.
Does it like look at the dates on the images or in the
It does a couple things that I think are really nice. It tags all your imports as an import role that you can always search and find all the pictures you imported at any given point in time. It, like anything else, it keeps track of all the changes you've made to it.
Data that like the camera writes.
That's where it's a lot better is the actual EXIF data, and you can apply your own tags to it. So I think that's the organizational features of F-Spot. I haven't seen anything that comes close to making it as easy to find stuff, organize stuff. They're getting a number of plugins for Picasa and other
things. The best program what I saw organizing as far as your album organization was Adobe, I think they call it Photo Album, something like that. But that was only for Windows. And I used to use it for some time. And I didn't actually find any program that close to whatever it was doing.
I have read that that's actually a really good program.
It is
a
very good program. If that would be on Linux, I would pay money for it. I would pay my $50 for it. Yes. So, cool. That's all.
iPhoto and OS X is pretty decent.
Can't run it.
Sure.
I mean, if I don't want to spend $59 for my iPhone, make it happen. Yeah.
So I can find like all the pictures of myself.
iPhoto, no offense to F-Spot and everything. Things. I mean, I like this.
Yeah, you need to do it. You need to add a manual.
What was the way anything Linux has? Honestly.
They're there.
I know the hardware is expensive, but the hardware, you get what you pay for.
Together,
it's all high-end hardware. So if you have the money and everything.
Okay.
Even iPhoto and Adobe, free apps that come with the Mac and everything.
Automatically,
blows away anything
based on like date.
So,
like just
let's move on.
I want all the.
Well, seriously, can you name it?
I absolutely do.
Is it based on the import?
I've used all three, and I would honestly love to see an iPhoto for Linux. I really would.
I don't have $2,000 for a computer, but I'm thinking about $3,000 brewing structure. So.
So yeah, it's got this timeline up here, and that's it's written in mono. So
that's not a very good demo.
He just got Python.
I know.
Shall we keep him going?
I got mono.
Yep.
Actually.
He got monetized.
He got mono.
there were a few applications. Last week we actually were talking about this Linux and CNC. So we're talking about that. And then Adam last week set up this FTP server, really fast, with this GA. Can you say what it is?
G admin tools.
God.
I don't know.
Yes,
I
didn't want to
do it. Gadmin do what?
Gadmin do
it. Say it almost like you're swearing.
Gadmin tools.
Yeah.
Like that.
So he was saying it was good, and I believe him. You know,
there's some of it. I don't know. They're a little bit confusing. Some of them, they're not the most intuitive interfaces, but they are interfaces to some config files that a layperson who hasn't worked with an FTP server might get really frustrated with. So, like, I managed to get the server up and running and create different user accounts for it with access to different directories and some fairly complicated stuff. It would have taken me hours to sit down and read through the man pages or config file.
And then I uploaded file there, and then he quickly closed the port. You know, the security now. As Steve Gibson couldn't come to his house. That's all he's doing.
Just come through the internet and pop on my computer.
There was some kind of article on
I opened it wide open from forwarding.
How to transcode actual Linux video using Mancoder. Mancoder. Mancoder is good, but you need to know all these things, you know. So it's actually good, you know.
Pretty much all those other pieces of software use this in the background.
Yes, that's what it is.
There's only about two or three different encoder programs.
You know,
they're all just plugged in.
I bought a video actually, and it does have. There's not really. It's how you evaluate beer, you know. And there's not a lot of visual there. It's more actually audio. So, you know, if I would want to actually rip audio from the video, probably that's what I would use.
Yeah, this is really useful for that.
Yeah.
Is there a way to know when like an application like this, what libraries it's using?
Yeah, there's a Linux command.
So
I don't know what it is.
It's called give it up.
LD. LVD, is that it?
No.
LDD, print shared library dependencies. That might be it. So if you go LDD Mancoder, not found. I suppose I should check whether I even have it.
There is the, your package manager can tell you what dependencies it has.
Well, something kind
so
of.
If you could be that file, then it probably told you that it was hosed.
Yeah. Yeah, it was hosed. Because I saved the tags, so I converted the file.
That's a good question.
Last week we were talking about this create spaces. That's actually where I bought that. Somebody put it in their content, and I was able to buy it from there. So if you have a content you want to sell, this is actually on demand. You own the rights. They don't own the rights. They're actually telling you they don't own the rights.
Huh.
There was an article, how to write a Linux virus. Did somebody read this?
No, but it sounds interesting.
Even this week, actually, there was discussion about this, how to write a Linux virus. And, I wonder, did you read it? Read about it? Mm-hmm. Give it up about that thing.
I read through it.
It's got to be more than one way to do it.
I don't know. I more just went straight to the comments, and everybody said, yeah, everybody knew about this, like, for 2 years. No one really cares.
Okay, so we are safe.
I think we're okay for now.
Is it Steve Gibson who is writing his article?
There we go. Yeah, it is. It is.
So how do
you
do it? Where is it? I didn't read it.
It was pretty much the same thing that happens in Outlook. Pretty much you send them an executable, and Outlook automatically, you know, executes Windows programs. And it was... can't remember Evolution or whatever.
I don't use Evolution.
Well, you're safe then. Could automatically open a launcher file. It would automatically open a launcher file and then execute.
So it's not how it
still doesn't have root privileges, though, does it?
For evolution.
Pretty much.
It doesn't have root privileges, though.
It only well, it can still wipe your home drive. I mean, who cares if it trashes your file system if your home drive is gone?
that's what you back it up.
40 hours!
Your iPhone is the remote.
Well, you run your browser as a different user.
Is it through...
It is the LDD command.
L what?
Open up a prompt.
Prompt.
5 second demo.
Can you get that to work with
Boxy? You got the command?
You know what? Name of a pro. You got the name of a program? Type so LDD space and whatever
it
is.
But it keeps the
mem folder.
Try again.
Mem.
Hang on.
If that's if you have it, you have it installed, right?
Yeah, I don't have it.
It has to be installed.
Let's see if I have it installed.
Like GIMP,
you're trying
to
put there, right? How about...
Yeah, put GIMP.
LDD. You have to... LDD. Do I have LDD?
In the sudo?
No, I probably have to go to the Etsy.
No, LDD just doesn't search your path. It only searches...
Mine does. Or wait, oh yeah, go to... Go to user bin and then
USR where?
Bin. And then no slash.
It might work at least.
No forward slash. Just bin. Yeah. Yep. And then type LBB bin. There. And it gives you all the different libraries that the GIMP uses.
So you can enjoy yourself, you know, tonight when you get home. You can actually go and say, you can check it out.
Huh. Never knew that.
Okay.
Yeah, this is awesome. I don't need this library.
Then last week we were talking about this guy here. That I cannot say that.
Arduino?
Yeah. Arduino, whatever.
Yeah, what a weird name, huh?
Yeah, but it looks like it was working, so great. And then Adobe and Nokia pledge $100 million for Flash and Air. For those applications. So, what that means that I guess we are going to have some applications there. Somebody has money, a lot of applications.
All right, another framework that we can support.
Well, Adobe is pushing Air for some time. You know?
Oh, yeah.
And it really hasn't gone anywhere, even.
There was that was the front article of Linux Journal this month. Was Adobe Air and all the apps that you can run on Linux.
Air is a really good idea. They just didn't integrate it well enough with any existing technologies.
You know, there was something.
Could be cross-platform. Could be good.
There was some kind of connection between Nokia and Fluendo. I read it somewhere this week, and I was surprised. I thought that Fluendo was on its own.
The only thing I'm mad about Fluendo with is we can only get what's their media player? Is that the Elijah? That's not the Elijah, is it?
Elijah.
The media players, yeah, they only have it packaged for Ubuntu or just plain old source code.
And I tried to compile it, and I gave up because it's using actually some kind of sub-libraries
And of course, those aren't packaged either, so you have to install those.
I take that back. I think you can get a dev file for it, but maybe it was in the Fedora, the Fresh RPMs. So you've got the website up there, don't you? The Fluendo one. What's it? I forget how exactly to spell it.
Stop. Stupid Python program will end when I take control C.
Service
products.
Hang on. I'll see if it's in the repositories.
I don't see it here. Never mind. What else do we have there?
I tried to view that like multiple times and the website was down. And I just looked at it. Now it's back up.
Well, yeah, I did too. It's the one thing I wanted to click on. And I kept going, it was someone's blog on their server at home, and I'm like, man, they tore their own thing down.
Yeah, someone. PD.
Actually, this guy is from Linux Week Tech Show. And he's working a lot of with TV and media. So there's an article about that HodgePodge.
What is it?
It's I think it's high definition. Well, it's HodgePodge, so your capture card. I think that's what it is.
Is it better
than your package?
It actually works.
Or is that something to run in a TV?
It's the hardware.
It's just a hardware CD cable.
Is it like a standalone capture device?
Yeah, it's just
external
capture devices. It's just the capturing hardware. It's not a
standalone channel there now, right?
You know, that's a good concept, but they need to take it a step further and make it a fully fledged DVR unit itself, you know. Make it its own standalone device, make it cross-platform, and make it show up as a NAT, and then you've got a good solution.
You're right. I've never been terribly impressed with HodgePodge.
I tried
one of their TV tuner cards, a PCI card, like an IDH or something like that.
I haven't had any problems with mine. Yeah, it just works.
Much depend, though, like for, I would say a lot of people on Linux like HodgePodge because
it
nice works.
I have one of those, and then I have one of those HCTV 5500, you know, the special high-def card that's made for Linux.
Yeah.
And those two just work. I haven't had any problems with them. So maybe I'm lucky.
Yeah. There was a FOSDEM conference.
You know, I was really disappointed with this.
Wait.
They had the video, and you couldn't see the screen, and they had the audio, and they only had the audio on the left channel, and on the right-hand channel they had full static, and the audio skipped about once every 4 minutes. It skipped like 2 or 3 seconds. I wanted to listen to it. I actually listened to 15 minutes worth of complete and utter crap. The crappiest sound quality ever, because I wanted to listen to it, and eventually I just gave up.
So did you get anything out of those 15
minutes? Yeah, it was very interesting what they're doing with X.
Because the Keith Packard, whatever is his name, he's actually the head honcho. He works for Intel. And he's actually leading leading a sort of project.
Yeah. What is the overview of it?
The part that I had heard, it's an hour-long talk, so I only heard a part of it.
Okay.
I heard about the graphics execution manager, which pretty much they're writing their own kind of embedded operating system into X that does management of memory and resources, where before they never had any manager. So they had the 3D, they had the 2D, they had all these different pieces, but they couldn't talk to one another. So if you wanted to do something in 2D and pipe it to 3D, you actually had to do it on the video card, offload it into main memory, and then reload it back onto the video card into 3D in order to transfer it, because there was no transfer between the different pieces. So everything was way inefficient when you wanted to talk to the different pieces. So they added this piece right in the middle that manages everything, manages caching and all that, and it provided for really easy ways to connect all of the different pieces together.
Huh. Was this the next thing that will come out, or is this a ways off? Or
I think it should be fairly soon if it's not already like in the works.
Okay, cool.
I don't know. That was probably towards the end of the hour talk.
Yeah. You know, because at some point, well, about half a year ago, the people are complaining that Xorg is not doing a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, that there wasn't a lot of bugs fixing, and that their release cycle was too slow and stuff like that. So maybe they were just busy.
It was actually really interesting if you're interested in how it works underneath the hood, but the audio just kills it.
You're supposed to download the flash and then rip the audio off.
It wouldn't have fixed it because the audio was just bad to begin with. There were glitches in the audio. Well, that's what I did. I actually muted one channel on my sound card and listened to it.
Yeah.
But there was still a little bit of static, and the missing sections of like 4 or 5 seconds, it always occurred when he was saying something important. So it's like, what the heck did he say? And there's no, you know, you'll never know what he said.
Yeah. Well, you can write him an email. Probably.
That was, I think, the first comment. Somebody needs to transcribe this and guess what he says every 2 minutes.
In how to actually, we have a few about IP addresses, and there was some really interesting concept which actually got me excited. Nothing really gets me excited anymore. But what this guy, actually there is a database behind it. And so here's actually the dump from a database. You have multiple tables, I think you have 5 tables. And what they do is how they, because towns or cities are assigned ranges of IP addresses, but it can be actually bouncing. So that's why you need to make a calculation on the IP address. And how they did it was that they got IP address and they took the first number, multiplied by 256, and then they added to a second number, plus they multiplied by 256, plus the third number. They throw away the fourth number because they were saying, well, all the fourth numbers are from the same geographical area. And then you got your result and you matched it against the database where you actually had your number, so you could actually do the range.
We do this on thesumopool.com. We actually use a database from a company called Maxmind.com, I think it is. They have a free version.
Okay.
It's only, I think, about 4% off accuracy from like paid version.
Okay.
And yeah, it's basically, I think, only about 2 or 3 tables. And yeah, like you said, it's just the IP blocks.
Yes.
Since an IP address is just a one-sided integer, yes. You just calculate that and it goes in between. And it works.
Yeah.
Instantly.
Yeah.
I don't know how to describe it.
I'm sort of a data person.
You can do that with GPS coordinates, too. I've seen that done, where they have, like, different
longitude
items
that are
latitude and longitude, and then you can give it an SQL statement that will say, okay, I want everything within 50 miles of this latitude and longitude, and it actually does all the math and everything right in the SQL statement.
That's just the backbone of our list of local site. That's how we call our shirts.
So if I need something like that, I'll come to see you.
Absolutely, that's what we specialize in.
Not that I would want to pull something out of it for free, but that's what is going to happen.
No, we have a lot for.
You might get some beer.
You might get some beer. Yeah,
that's about.
That's.
So I was, you know, it. That this concept actually, it's. I mean, you take a string and you convert it to a certain.
The database has got the latitude and longitude, right?
Yes, it does. Yes.
So does MaxMind. In case you check that out.
Because this actually, this dump, he's saying that he's going to update how accurate it is. So maybe he's not saying where it's coming from. Mm-hmm.
So your IP address is given out geographically? Is that the whole gist of this?
Sort of.
But then we were saying, how do you know? I'm a charter customer. Well, I'm coming to. From here, I go, my charter is in Kentucky, somewhere there. You know? So from here, I go actually on private network to Kentucky, and then I'm getting out in Kentucky to a public network. How does it know that I'm in here?
Are you asking me?
Yeah.
Oh, basically, like, you can look up, like, the way MaxMind or wherever you got this database from was, like, you know, all the internet addresses are registered with a company or things like that.
Yes.
And they just assign them out to geographic, or they figure out what blocks are.
But doesn't it actually know where I come up? So isn't it actually, doesn't know that I'm coming from Kentucky instead of from Oakland?
Well, it knows that Charter is using, like, their business is basically to figure out, there's this IP block, they ask Charter, where are you using this IP block, and they'd say Oakland.
So then they. So that was the
what's
just
your URL again?
I think it's maxmind.com.
No, your company that you use that you guys created for
there
the local
is,
business. For the
my company, the website I'm talking about is called listlocal.com.
Listed local?
And I'm kind of curious what city will put you in. It's not Eau Claire.
Maxima?
Probably
Maxima?
Maxmind. M-A-X-M-I-N-D. Or just type G-O-I-P.
G-O-I-P.
G-E-O-I-P.
G-E-O-I-P.
That's probably all you need.
So, like, I could use your site, for example, to look for all sources of broadband, you know?
Probably not.
Okay.
It's more real estate than vehicle listings.
Okay, something simple. Pizza.
You probably could, yeah.
Pizza.
Cool.
Very nice. Yeah, but they have a, if you search for GYP, I think free or something, they have basically
GYP City, GYP Colony.
The results I found for pizza. It's
positive. Free open source.
That's
right. City.
If you write that, something, go stop.
Because that actually, that's that thing, you know, here, it was actually the whole world.
Okay, yeah, so is this.
It doesn't get any process.
Yeah, I think their downloads are usually wrong.
Until you start.
They have a CSV version you can download.
It's as cool as Nintendo.
Whatever you want.
Yeah.
And they have a binary version, which may or may not be a little bit faster than the other.
That one was dumped from MySQL that we were on Oracle.
Oh,
it doesn't translate.
Just yeah, no, definitely not. So, you know, at least from here you can get a CSV version and then you know, process that into whatever band.
Yes. So if it's CSV, actually, I could, they call it external tables. What do you do from external table? Then you load it to regular.
Continue.
Right, yeah.
No, it's going to die because it receives our signal.
Does your site list at local.com, does it automatically go out and aggregate like businesses and stuff, or does it have to be like...
We have some third parties that do that. We're getting hopefully a business database. So
it's like a giant yellow pages nationwide kind of...
Yeah, thing. Exactly. We're just putting on some investors.
Do you do also the geolocation?
Yes, actually.
That's
what this is, basically.
See you later. Yeah, but we're saying that's like 50 miles from here.
Mm-hmm. We have some custom software that does geolocation-based searches, but it's very easy to do even in SQL.
Okay.
It's basically look up the latitude, longitude.
Cool. Very nice. I learned something.
If you have questions about it, yeah, feel free to ask.
I learned something new. I'm excited about
this. This is how they know when you go to the Pirate Bay where that girl should be from.
Yeah, I was actually just going to say that. If you ever see those things that say, you know, Wisconsin or Grant, Wisconsin.
How did you know that?
She keeps following me! She's hiding behind that tree.
How did you know they do that?
And they're on the road to Wisconsin. I don't want to meet any of them.
We're definitely all off limits here.
So at the mall last week.
Well, come on, we're all geeks. We all probably have relatively intelligent jobs and are employed and stuff.
Yeah. What?
It's not the bottom of the feeding, you know, post, so to speak.
I'm talking something.
I don't know.
Actually, that website, if I can get back to it, it had a lot of, you know, let's say, like, something is coming to my server. No, it's not this one.
Yeah, that one I wouldn't. That first one, blocking IP addresses, that may or may not be a good way to do it, depending on what you're trying to do. We actually had a situation where we get a lot of spam from, there's a lot of people in India and Cameroon and stuff like that. They're just, like, putting out spam classifieds and things like that. So we're toying with the idea of just, you know, blocking everything from outside the U.S. Their values be something false positive, but whatever. Doing it...
This guy actually had, let's say, like, he was, how deny allow countries from, so he was saying, if this guy is not coming from the location what I want, and he's appearing more than just once, you know, so then he was out, you were processing, and then you write into IP tables.
Yeah, the thing is with that, though, like, default IP tables, like, it depends how much you want to block.
Yes.
We wanted to block everything outside the U.S., and there are a lot of IP blocks. We're talking like in the millions of IP blocks that we're trying to block. The default IP table is going to do a linear search through all that, which is going to be slow. It's going to get slow.
Yes.
There are some patches for IP tables, and there are some other options that will do like a more efficient binary searches or different searches.
You just got to get multiple servers and organize them in a tree and have every server do a little chunk.
We have lots of servers.
I was just going to say, you have to start doing like clustering with some sort of database-based IP table that can do massive search.
Well, you just need a more efficient search, not going through every single one.
Some kind of hash or something.
Some sort of index, yeah.
Like that. Yeah. Specifically, the patches are a form of a binary tree, but they're significantly more faster.
It was interesting that actually it was about geolocation and IP addresses. It was more, I found it interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really fun stuff. Yeah. That up with Google Maps or various mapping services, and it would be really cool stuff.
You can pin those girls' pictures on your Google Maps.
One trick with the IP tables that doesn't really have anything to do with this, but it's kind of interesting. You can make your own poor man's load balancer just using IP tables. What you can take is you just take the last digit. If it's even, go here. If it's odd, go here.
Yeah, like modulus based hash.
Yep. And it's just a simple load balancer, so you don't have to buy, load balancer hardware if you're on a budget.
We like to spend money. Were you going to say something? Or?
I was just going to say, theoretically, with the structure of the business, isn't Google Maps a competitor to what you're doing, essentially?
Not really. This is one of the sites we do. It's incredibly saturated. The big ones, Yellow Pages, Yellow Book, blah, blah, blah.
Sure.
And there's hundreds of small ones. But something like doing it. So
what kind of a server hardware do you have to support something like this in the background?
Right now, it's just, I think, two servers and a database server. We haven't really started marketing whatsoever right now. We're looking for investors, or we're talking to investors right now, really get marketing and things like that. Mm-hmm. Really, you don't need a lot.
Mm-hmm. I was just curious what kind of pipe you need and what kind of server load you need to support and especially with the large database of businesses.
We have a lot of problems. That was the thing. Businesses, we don't have a ton of businesses. Vehicles, we are one of the biggest, databases actually. No one knows. Impressing. But back to what you said, we were doing it completely through SQL, and then we converted some stuff to a more customized, very efficient search. Secret sauce. But
usually what they do with searches like that, they create a custom index.
Yep.
What do we have? We take Honeycomb.
For what? All of the.
And Deca.
Okay, and I think I've heard of that, and that's basically what we've created, a custom index, which we can do lookups very fast, which then talk to the SQL database, we'll get on that. I think we don't get a ton of traffic. I mean, we get a decent amount of traffic, I think.
What's the average?
Maybe a megabit per second.
How many uniques do you have a month?
I can't say.
That's a secret.
Okay. That's less than 100.
Never mind. Let's keep on moving. There was an article about Zenity. I use Zenity a little bit, so there was an article about
that. That's useful. Very useful.
Sorry. You should really look into, if you wanted to start some advertising campaigns, mm-hmm. and you wanted to set up some affiliate marketing or some pay-per-click campaigns or something, you should check out 7search.com. They're one of the lowest pay-per-click advertisers that beat out, I've been playing around with it, they beat out at Google AdWords 8-1 in price. And then, I was using this as a gift to my dad for Christmas this year. He has a hunting and fishing business, and I gave him a campaign using 7search. And for, I think it was, paid $25 or $35, and it drove 700 clicks to his website. So
that's interesting. One thing, I'll just real be real quick, but that we're looking for investors for is we've actually made a very, very cool advertising platform product. Completely based on geolocation and things like that, where they can basically specify, I want to advertise within 20 miles of Eau Claire, 50 miles of Minneapolis, and things like that, within certain sections of your site. And that's one of the things we're hoping to profit on. But that's another useful thing you can do with the geolocation.
I think the Facebook advertising model is pretty cool too, where you can do advertising on a per network basis, per town or per state or per.
Yep, and that's actually we have three tiers where it's within a radius or basically a bounding box.
Sure. It's less structured that way, but you get the idea.
I figured out how to block those annoying pictures.
Those Facebook,
the side of the banner.
Yeah, the side of the banner advertisements that are mining your data like mad.
Is it like with the Firefox add-on, Adblock?
No, just in Opera. It's I actually just went in and from your ad server, I just included that in the list of don't serve me stuff from here. And the ads magically went away.
Yeah, it's amazing how much quicker this thing.
Yeah, and it works, and it doesn't flash at me anymore.
Let's say, like, when we are looking for geolocations, we are more looking for fraud.
Yeah.
You know, that's the concern.
Yeah, that's kind of ours. And, I know the MaxBank company, like, they used to really promote their GIP stuff, and now they're promoting fraud.
Yeah.
Which probably has to do with their GIP. I don't know what it has to do with, but maybe something to look into.
Well, filtering by location, assuming that anyone from outside of the U.S. is fraudulent.
Well, if you are doing business just within the United States, or if you are making
the
business just within Wisconsin,
a proxy service,
and you are shipping anywhere else,
so were you trying
images
to
out and compress it?
I'm not trying anybody to block anybody, but I know at some point we had orders which they were coming from IP addresses from outside of the United States, and shipment was within the United States. So maybe the person was really fast. I doubt. So that was actually red flag.
Shipments from Cafe Press.
It's something that I don't work on.
That's why you need new shoes. That's why you need new shoes. You have to run back to the United States.
Yes, yes, from Nigeria.
And all the ads disappeared because there's only like 10 sizes for all the ads.
On captchas and things like that.
And
I
literally have an image that's
not
the same
thing. There's got to be some in various regions.
Exactly.
They have like
some
size publishers.
They have humans.
All the ads disappear even without blocking.
Like,
I'm sure in Firefox
do that all day.
User styles too.
Yep.
User styles.
Work from home. What do you think that's going
for?
We have two more how-tos. We have automated Ubuntu server shutdown. I guess it doesn't probably have to be Ubuntu. It can be any server.
Is that one of those, things with the anvil hanging over your computer?
Absolutely.
You throw a dominoes that launch a little, arrow and cut the wire.
Have you ever seen those little plug-in and timers?
I think this was more on weight on network.
Oh,
for Waco land. So
shut down your server if there's no computers to serve to.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Have you ever seen those plug-in timers that turn the power on and off?
Yeah.
Rather than plugging it into that, they just actually wire it and wrap it around the hard drive, so that when it turns on, it just turns your hard drive into a magnet.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
That'll shut
it
down.
I like magnets. And then there was something about SSH host key protection, which I don't think that I understood, but there was something about it. It was a long article, and if it's a long article, it has to be good. It's all right.
Yeah, that always annoys me when I change an IP address of a PC, and it's like, oh, somebody's trying to do something bad, I'm not going to let you in, and I have to go in and delete the line.
Yeah, there's much better tutorials than that, which are basically like three commands, but all our servers are only accessible by SSH keys and password. That's really the way to go.
Do you do both, or
some
just require
you
one?
You should do
other?
Both.
I know you should.
If you don't do both, I don't do both. It's annoying.
So you just got to have the host keys.
A blank. Well, I mean, you have to have a password, but it's a blank.
Blank password.
So.
Is that required based on your configuration of SSH? Because I've got it set up at home with the host key, and it doesn't require me to enter a password. It just
no. But you can. There's a configuration where you can only block anything that isn't sending a host key or an SSH key.
Okay.
And that's what we do because.
But it doesn't actually prompt for a password or.
Your prompt for a password.
Your setup does.
Well, it'll always prompt for a password, but if it's a blank password, then it doesn't matter. I mean,
that must be a server configuration because I got one.
It's been a while since I have a script that just configures the servers automatically.
Okay.
So it's been a while since I've actually manually configured something, but it's possible to do it. Again. And it's so nice.
Yeah.
Cool. So are we almost done?
I got the three. Pendants or whatever, and I got the sword, and
Got the Moon Pearl.
Triforce?
Wow.
The Legend of Zelda, The Missing Link.
Oh, Missing Link. Wow, missing Link. How about this piece?
I think so. I don't know. I got it. I'm playing it. It's like awesome. I got to walk through on this phone. I'm like, what the heck is
it? Oh, okay.
Three pendants, and then you get the sword, and then I got to go back and...
The pendants are first, then you got to put together the...
Get the sword and the sword.
So, not that I...
Once you get to the sword, you can get into the other dungeons then to for the actual tribe.
Which version of this? Which
the Super Nintendo version.
The Super Nintendo. Oh, yeah, okay.
It's a link to the past.
It is a link to the past.
The one, the Nintendo one, number two, oh my goodness, that was tough.
Good luck, though.
That was hard.
I'll be down.
Yeah, the same thing. It wasn't as good, but it was hard.
Everybody, Zelda is leaving. See you next week. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Hack Republic Radio. HPR is sponsored by Caro.net, so head on over to caro.net for all your hosting needs.